This is Be Better Than Your BS with Risha Grant. And around here, we get rid of the BS. Game-changing women, raw stories, real truth about what it takes to lead, win, and stay sane in the process. If you've ever had to fight for your seat at the table, this space is for you. This is Now Media Television. Life and business are about more than titles and wins. They're about how you show up and the culture you create around you. Sports taught me that early. Discipline, teamwork, and knowing how to pivot under pressure. And that's why I do this show. I'm Risha Grant, the People's Champ, and I am here to bring you real conversations with leaders, change makers, and everyday people who are shaping culture in powerful ways. And today, I'm sitting down with someone who knows a lot about impact, perseverance, and leadership. My guest is DNA High Easton, an attorney licensed in both Texas and Massachusetts, who specializes in estate planning, probate, business law, and guardianship. Before practicing law, she worked as a social worker navigating tough systems to support and protect children and families. From social work to the courtroom, she's built her career on advocacy, resilience, and making sure people's voices are heard. This conversation is going to be powerful, so let's get to it. Every career has a warm-up. Before the big wins and the big titles, there's a story of how it all began. Let's talk about your pregame. Hi, DNA, thank you so much for being here.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Definitely. So now, before law, social work, I mean, it's not a huge jump. There's probably a great story there, but what drew you to serving families in that way?
Well, it's interesting because I always knew I wanted to help families. I just never knew in what capacity that was going to look like, right? So when I graduated from college, I was a little nuts and decided that I was going to apply anywhere in the country and I was going to get the very first job that I got. Wow. Ironically, that ended up me becoming a social worker, right? So I ended up in Tucson, Arizona. I was working as a social worker in a sex abuse unit, which was very heavy at the time, right. Just graduating college.
I can imagine. That's heavy at any point in life. So
okay, absolutely. So, you know, I was able to really be involved with families. And over the course of my life, even before I went to college, I was kind of involved in family work in different capacities. Like I had worked for RAIN, which is it's an organization that helps people who are going through rape, incest, all of those types of things. Wow. So I always knew I wanted to help families. I just didn't know in what capacity that looked like, but I felt like I was being led directly to where I was supposed to go. When I then was a social worker, I realized that in the system, everything changed when people were in court. So I found myself speaking when I wasn't supposed to. My attorneys that were working for the department told me I wasn't allowed to talk in the courtroom unless I was testifying.
So you weren't held in contempt, were you?
No, thankfully not. I had built good relationships with the judges, so they were very excited to allow me to speak, even though I wasn't.
So they knew it was passion. They knew it was passion and not insubordination, right?
Absolutely. If that's the case, I would have never gotten to law school. So so after that, you know, experience, I decided that I wanted to kind of go to the kind of the career field of wanting to become a judge. And right. So in order to become a judge, you have to go to law school. So that's kind of how that trajectory happened. But I'm very grateful for it because it's led me to the career path that I'm in and I love being in today.
So did you see a connection then between if I really want to help these kids, I need to be able to make decisions to help the kids versus just kind of being here to guide them and to speak for them? I can actually help them through changing law or making not judges don't change law, but, you know, being able to help in that way.
Absolutely. I realize that, you know, the family structure is where everything happens. That's the start of everybody's lives. And if I could make an impact within the confines of the law, I can be able to help children, families in a different capacity. And so I knew, like I said, I wanted to do something involving families. I never knew what that looked like until I fell into my career path. I used to tell my parents all the time, I'm like, I don't even know how I got here, but by the grace of God, here I am. So that is how this all happened. And so I'm really grateful to be able to help families in the confines of the family structure by doing it by using the law.
Were there any values just instilled in you with your family that led you down the path? I mean, because I don't know, working with neglected children and incest and rape, like that is really, really a tough thing to do every day. So were there values instilled? And then what kind of mindset did you have to go into that kind of work every day?
Well, it's interesting, you know, growing up, I was raised in a faith-filled household. So, you know, my faith has allowed me to keep going even now with the hard trials that I deal with in my practice. But, you know, my family was a very, very tight-knit family, mm-hmm. even my extended family. So those kind of family values of wanting to stick together, that really shaped me in never giving up and wanting to help. Because it's just a natural progression of all of us wanting to help each other, despite what circumstances either one of us or any one of us have been in right. throughout our lifetime. So that was something that was really instilled in me at an early age. And so I didn't realize or know anything about secondary trauma until I was living it, right? Mm-hmm. Which is basically yeah. the idea that I'm going to take on the emotions and the feelings that a lot of my clients had. So that was a very, 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 very rude awakening for me. Yeah. And it kind of helped me to figure out how to still help families, but also make sure that I take care of myself so I can still show up and still be there for families. And so over the course of time, I think the mindset I always had was I'm here to make a difference, even if it's something small. Because I found myself, you know, when you work with these children, they're the ones that are going through the hardest times yes. in their lives. Their parents are being ripped away from them on top of the alleged neglect that they're having to experience. So there's a whole depth that a lot of people don't understand with the psychological component of it. And I was a major in criminal justice and a minor in psychology from George Washington University. So I feel like I've always had an idea of how I can help.
Yeah.
But this was just it was a manifestation of the realness of life once yeah. I became a social worker.
Well, and just, I mean, even hearing about all of the things that you've done, the degrees and, I mean, all of it kind of makes sense as to why you ended up doing the work that you do. And we need so many people doing this kind of work, because if there's one thing that just kind of drives me over the edge, it's people hurting children. I don't care if it's their parents or some stranger on the street. Kids should have the ability to feel safe and be safe in the environments they're in. And you know, we don't see it in our homes, and now we're not seeing it in our schools or in our movie theaters or just about anywhere we go. I want to hear a little bit about your background, though, because I learned at Michigan State you jumped into competition. So what was that about, and what made you lean into it?
Well, interesting story. you know, because I always knew that I wanted to be a family law attorney. I mean, that's the crux of where I started and where I was going to continue no matter what. I decided that, you know, in order to be there for the families in a different capacity as a potential lawyer, that I needed to have the skill set needed to know what that looks like. Mm-hmm. And in law school, they teach you how to think like a lawyer, but they don't teach you actually how to be a lawyer until you actually have the experiences, right?
Yeah, okay.
So for me, having the experiences meant, you know, finding internships, getting certain jobs that were in the related law that I wanted to be in, and then also being in competition. So joining the arbitration team was amazing for me. And arbitration is basically, it's very similar to a trial. The only difference is that you're sitting down and there's somebody known as an arbitrator, which is a person who makes final binding decisions. It's not appealable, meaning people can't keep coming back and trying to change the course of time and change the decision right. of the person who made it. So I thought it was a really great opportunity for me to learn the skill set that I was going to need to become a trial lawyer, just in a different realm of law. So a lot of people use arbitration. It's used in family law courts. It's used right. in, you know, employment law. I mean, pretty much anybody can try to request an arbitrator, especially if they have a civil matter, which is basically anybody that doesn't have a criminal matter.
Yeah.
So it was a great opportunity for me. I was able to learn a lot and I loved every second of it.
Yeah, I think things like arbitration, I even think about debate. Like I wish I had taken debate, because you have to learn how to debate things that you don't believe in. You have to learn how to debate well the things that you do believe in. And then you just have to be able to speak on any topic that they give you. And I think things like that are so good for life. I kind of wish they redo. Mm-hmm. I wish they will redo high school requirements, because I think there's some things that are being left out of a very important conversation.
I agree wholeheartedly, and it's funny yes. because I never joined a debate team when I was in high school.
No,
I I'm wondering if they even offered it. They probably did. I just wasn't thinking about
they,
being
they
a lawyer.
Actually, they offered it. It just wasn't cool. It wasn't cool.
Right.
So, and it's one of those things that's so much cooler the older we get. So,
right.
What role did advocacy play in who you became even before you earned your degree?
Oh, wow. Well, if you call my mother right now, she would tell you that I was always advocating for myself, even when I wasn't supposed to. Okay.
Okay.
So I was always very vocal as a child, even though I wasn't on debate teams and I didn't join any of those types of groups growing up. I was always speaking, even more so than I was supposed to.
Yeah.
Right. Like
I'm
my mom was
a,
always.
I'm seeing a common theme here of you not speaking. Yes, I bet there are some report cards like DNA's a great student, but she talks too much.
Pretty much. My whole life. My mom was like, you are talking to more than you're supposed to. You don't need to tell everyone my business. And I was like, you're right. I guess I need to stop doing that. But it's been great growing up. I mean, as an attorney, I can really articulate my clients' positions in what they're looking to do in their cases. So I'm grateful that I was a very vocal child. And it probably explains why my entire family was telling me that I was going to end up becoming a lawyer, because here I am.
Yes. So when you think back to the beginning, what personal BS did you have to push through?
Oof, so much. I had to push through people thinking that I wasn't enough. I wasn't good enough. I couldn't articulate myself well enough. I couldn't write. I couldn't read properly. I mean, there were so many different experiences that I had growing up that really defined and shaped me becoming more vocal. I think there was a time in my life where I was really silenced, and feeling silenced in that moment made me speak louder as I got older. Now, sometimes a little too loud because my family gets sick of me when I do it, but I'm grateful for the opportunities because they really shaped me and being who I am today.
I love that. Y'all, we will be right back with DNA High Easton.
Hold up, we're just getting started. More truth, more strategy, and less BS. Coming up next on Be Better Than Your BS, right here on Now Media Television. This is Be Better Than Your BS with Risha Grant, and around here, we get rid of the BS.
Every career has that defining move, the risk, the pivot, the play that changes the course of their game. Let's talk about yours. Now, you are an entrepreneur. You could have went and worked for any law firm, I'm sure, but you may have taken that route. But tell me a little bit about that journey.
Ooh, how much time do we have?
About 11 minutes.
Okay. I'll try to keep it brief. So essentially, you know, I worked for a lot of law firms. My journey even to becoming a lawyer was not easy. I had to push past a lot of things, including even taking the bar and what that looks like. It took me about 2.5 years to get to that place and actually becoming a lawyer, even though I was working in the legal field for a while after I left social work. But basically, when I work for other law firms, I enjoyed it. I took it as an opportunity for me to learn as much as possible. I had always had a goal in mind that I wanted to be my own boss, even when I was little, because my parents, it's so funny how much they influenced me, because I mean, they are my parents, but they said that eventually I was always going to end up working for myself. And so I had a goal in mind of what that looked like and when that time was going to be, but I wasn't sure I was going to hit it as early as I have.
Right.
So working at law firms, it was a great experience. I really enjoyed working with a lot of them. But it got to the point where my health took a turn, my schedule was crazy, I wasn't able to spend any time with my husband, and I felt this kind of disconnect at a previous firm that I was at, and so I decided that it was time for me to start living and working for myself, because I was so caught up in living and working for other people. And sometimes you just wake up one day and you're like, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
I need to pour into myself, be there for myself. And because at the end of the day, I can only bet on myself, right?
Yes. It's so big, but entrepreneurship is not, I believe that it's glamorized right now. Like, we are the culture of entrepreneurship. I know when I started my company 27 years ago, there was not a whole lot out there. Like, I literally remember handwriting this woman who had the kind of firm that I wanted in New York, and then waiting for her to write me back. Like, that's how, That's how much entrepreneurship was just, it was not in my space. So did you know anything about running a business when you first got started?
No. And it was probably the most terrifying thing I think I've ever done in my entire life. And I've done a lot of terrifying things, yes, including leaving the country and not knowing anybody and deciding, hey, I'm going to live on my own. It was terrifying to the point where my husband was a huge encouragement for me because he has always had that entrepreneurial spirit. Yeah. I have wanted to have it, but I've been playing it safe for a long time just based on my past experiences and what that looked like and feeling like I was going to fail and hearing that I was going to fail. Just that is the voice that you never want to listen to, but that's the voice that you have to keep overcoming every single time that you walk into your business and you're working your business every single day. Yeah. But I had no idea.
So what surprised you the most about entrepreneurship?
Ooh, that I have to do everything. I mean, you know, working for firms, I was kind of within their realm, right? I was under their bubble. So I was doing the legal work. And yes, I was doing a lot of admin work that came along with it, but I wasn't running the business, right? So I was I had a really full sense of reality that, like, I can do this because I was doing certain things in other people's firms. But now that I have my own, I'm like, okay, I got to give them all grace. Yes. I understand the level of stress that they all were under to make sure that their employees were taken care of, that the clients were taken care of, that things were running smoothly. But that's been kind of an eye opener for me and realizing that I can't be 15, 16 places at once, right? Yeah. So in trying to prioritize my time, I went to a conference yesterday. It's called the WISE Conference out here in the Woodlands, Texas. And it was super empowering hearing a lot of different women speaking about their experiences in life. And there was a Dr. Michelle that was there, and she was talking about how time is money, but you have to be very intentional with your time. And yes, I resonated so much with it as an entrepreneur because I don't have a lot of time. I mean, there's 24 hours in a day, but you have to do 48 hours worth of work in 24 hours in a day. So you have to be very meticulous with your time.
Yes. And I say this all the time, but CEO to me means chief everything officer in the beginning of your business, because you're also the marketing person, you're the salesperson, you're the janitor, right? You are all of the roles. And whether you know how to play those roles or not, you have to learn, and you have to learn in quick time because, again, you are losing money. So I think one of the things that I really want people to get out of this show is, yes, I believe this is the best way to go out there and make your money, entrepreneurship, but know everything that you can know about it because you can't plan for everything.
You cannot. No matter what. And the saddest part about it is that you have to be prepared to expect the unexpected. Yes. And I think, you know, that's something that has really, I'm laughing because it's, you know, I'm a perfectionist and I'm learning to stray away from that perfectionism, but I cannot predict everything that's going to happen. And I need to be okay with the unexpected. And that's something that I've been learning every single day, that, you know, becoming a law firm owner, but just and also an entrepreneur, I can't control everything. And so I can do what I can do within what I can do. Right? And that's just what it has to stay with.
So, and you chose a field to me, entrepreneurship is one thing, law is a completely different thing, and you mix those two together. So that says a lot about you, like maybe just, I don't know, like that is, it's insane when I think about it. But I want to know more about your legal practice. So estate planning, probate, I think those kinds of things, trust, wills, very intimidating for families. How do you help clients feel supported throughout that process?
Well, you know, my life experiences, I touched briefly about it earlier, but, you know, when I was studying to become a lawyer, I had to take the bar exam. Mm-hmm. And over the course of 2.5 years, I was experiencing a lot of incapacitation and death. And so trying to live life while you're trying to grieve is the hardest thing that you can do. So I feel like I also fell into this area of law with estate planning and probate and guardianship, because it was a real life that I knew how to live. And so having that real life experience, it has really provided me that empathy and the ability to help my clients navigate through that. Now, obviously, estate planning is the purpose of planning for the future in the event of your death, right? And also in the event that you become incapacitated. Mm-hmm. Probate is dealing with life after someone has died, and guardianship is dealing with when someone is no longer able to make decisions for themselves, who can step in and be able to create that legal authority to do what needs to be done to protect them. So yeah. Those areas are very, very near and dear to my heart. And I think that's why I've been able to be really successful in those areas, because I've lived it. I know what it means. I know what it's like when people are not prepared for death. I know what it's like when people are prepared and what that can look like and what you can do to prevent your family having to go through that discord and the potential conflict if something were to happen to your loved one. Yeah. And then, you know, I also have the family law experience as well, where, you know, I was practicing in divorce and child custody and modifications when you're trying to modify an existing child custody order. So yeah. I still do a little bit of that as well. And so, you know, being in the field as a social worker, seeing abused and neglected children being hurt, and then trying to protect them in a different capacity right. as they've gotten older, or even within the family confines, right? To make sure that the families are protecting their children, not just personally mm-hmm. by finding potential people to serve as guardians for them in the event that they die or become incapacitated, but also financially. How can we make sure that we can take care of your children if you are financially not able to do so yourself?
Right. It's all so interesting. It is so much information within that. Like I'm having to look at some of the things that you're talking about right now, because I have family members dealing with health challenges that are going to make us have to go down these roads. And I want to talk about trust and wills a little bit, because mm-hmm. I recently got a trust. I believe I did it last year. And everybody tells you, get a will. But what I learned through my process is that it's great to have something, and that something is a will. But if you really want to protect, you need to have a trust. And I know that's a huge thing, but can you speak to it really quickly?
Sure, of course. So, you know, I always call the will a catch-all fail-safe, right? It's if you don't have anything else, you need to have at least a will, because if you do not, then the state's going to decide for you where your assets are going to go and who it's going to go to, just based on the default law known as intestate succession. A trust is a lot more complicated, but it's a better way to protect your assets, because it avoids your family having to go through court to be able to transfer assets upon your death. Right? It allows you to include incapacitation language so that in the event that you don't have a durable power of attorney or medical power of attorney or healthcare proxy, which are basically documents that help you during your lifetime, mm-hmm. You can include what you need to do and how your assets will be protective of you during your lifetime if you're incapacitated. And then it's completely private, right? Mm-hmm. So people are not going to be able to go up on the websites, in the registry, court registry, and be able to pull what's in your estate. If you also have property that's in multiple states, people don't realize this, but having a trust is the best thing you can do, because your family is going to have to go through the probate court to probate your estate if you own real property in multiple states. So a trust is a way to make sure that you don't have to go through the court. It's a faster process. You can protect your assets because it's completely private, and it just happens. Even though the value of the price of a trust might be a little bit more expensive, the long-term value is going to be so much better, because you can end up spending years in probate, spending thousands of dollars on attorney's fees. And the idea, at least especially for my clients, is I want to make sure that we're keeping as much money in your estate as possible, because your family deserves to have you know, some money and be financially protected as well as you while you're alive.
Yeah. I think the biggest part of a trust is remembering to actually put stuff in the trust. So I am trying to plan. Yeah, it is. So anyway, yes. So if you're listening, get the trust, but actually put the properties and the stuff in the trust. That is the biggest thing. And make sure that you plan well.
Hold up. We're just getting started. More truth, more strategy, and less BS. Coming up next on Be Better Than Your BS. Right here on Now Media Television. This is Be Better Than Your BS with Risha Grant. And around here, we get rid of the BS.
It's important to reflect on the lessons we've learned through our journey. So let's look at the wins, the losses, and the things you're still working on. Looking back, what's the BS you're still working through today, personally and professionally?
personally, not becoming a perfectionist or continuing to be a perfectionist, because the definition of business is not everything is going to be perfect, and you have to be okay with that. So that's a personal goal that I'm dealing with. And I think a professional one is not feeling like I'm dealing with the imposter syndrome, right? Mm-hmm. It's wild. I say this all the time, and I feel like I'm probably one of the realest attorneys you'll ever meet. Mm-hmm. But a lot of attorneys do not talk about the hard times. They don't talk about the losses. They don't talk about feeling like they're not good enough or that they don't know enough. And I think that's something about me that I've always been proud of. Failing the bar about 3 times before I took it the 4th time because I was dealing with grief, like I felt very alone in that, right? Because a lot of people were not talking about it. And so also, you know, the imposter syndrome of, okay, yes, I'm a law firm owner now, like I'm supposed to know everything, right? Yes. Like when call, they'll be like, okay, well, tell me about this. And I have to be like, okay, well, you know what, let me do some research on that and get back to you, and being okay in that space. And that's something that I'm definitely always pushing through every single day. But, you know, I feel like if more people even talked about it as business owners, as lawyers, all of the things, I think we all would be very happy and can kumbaya together.
Yes. Right. And it speaks to leadership, right? Because in leadership, it's really hard to be transparent. It's hard to be vulnerable because you don't want people to know what you don't know. But there's no way that we all know everything. So right. I agree with you. I think we should just say, I have no idea. Like, I'm going to figure it out. I will figure it out with you. But I think people respect that more than you acting like you know, and then you can't do your job effectively.
Exactly.
You have no idea. So how's your social work background made you a different kind of lawyer than most people would expect?
Ooh, I've seen a lot of BS in my life, so I don't take BS. I think I'm a very, very honest, transparent, direct type of attorney. Okay. But I find that a lot of my clients really enjoy that because they like to be told what's really going to go, like what could really happen, mm-hmm. right? I think the problem is with client expectations is if you tell them a fairy tale story or things are going to be okay and you're not keeping it real with them, they get more pissed off and angry. And that's how you have really, really disgruntled clients. And so I've been known to be very honest, very transparent, very direct. I don't take crap from people. And I think, but I do it with grace, right? So I'm not going to, you know, be rude or, you know, terrible towards people, right. But I am going to tell them, hey, listen, this is what we're working with. You can tell me, because I really pride myself on making my clients or allowing my clients to make an informed decision about their cases. Okay. I'm their lawyer, but at the end of the day, you are going to tell me how you want to run this case. Now, obviously, as long as it's legal, I will follow, but I'm also going to be real with them and say, listen, we could do that, but it's going to end up like this. Now, obviously I'm not a judge. Right. I can't speak directly on what a judge is going to do, but I can tell you more than likely based on my experiences, what they tend to do, and they'll make a decision that way. And I think being a social worker and having to remove children and keep children away from their parents, that's the hardest thing that you have to do. So everything else kind of seems like a breeze to me, as terrible as that sounds, but that's kind of been my experience as a lawyer.
And leading into that then, what's one of the most important lessons that you've learned from helping families through their hardest moments?
Ooh, we don't have enough time for that.
Give me one.
Okay, the biggest lesson that I've learned is you have to have patience. I think a lot of families, especially when they're going through hard times, they have that kind of popcorn mentality of I need this to happen right now. But obviously the system doesn't allow us to have things happen very quickly. You know, being a social worker, the process of people having to do reunification services, that takes time. Mm-hmm. It's not an immediate, I'm going to get my kids right back, because there's a protective measure that we need to have to see that you can protect your children if you reunify with them. Yeah. And the same thing kind of goes along with cases, right? It's not going to happen immediately if people are going through divorce. if people are going through the probate process, even when they're planning for their estate plan. I mean, if we could draft estate plans in one day, that would be amazing, right? Yeah. But there's a process that we have to have. And within that process, having a level of patience is going to take people a very long way with all of their legal matters. And I think that's something that I'm even trying to tell myself, right? I cannot do it at all in one sitting as much as I would love to, but I need to have patience with myself, because if I slow down and take the time that I need to, I can make sure that all my clients are taken care of.
I love that. So let's switch back to entrepreneurship for a little bit here. What is that one thing that you think every entrepreneur should know going into opening their own business practice, whatever it is?
Be prepared for the hard moments. And that's a very generalized thing to say, but I think, you know, we have this false sense of reality that, oh my gosh, everything is going to be great. I'm going to be making a lot of money and I'm going to have no issues. But I think it kind of goes along with my what I said earlier about preparing for the unexpected. But, you know, you're not always going to have high moments all the time, right? There's going to be times where business might be a little slow, and that's okay. So you need to prepare for when business is a little slow. And that's something that somebody had graciously told me before I started my law practice, that you need to prepare for the times that there are slow moments, and don't freak out. It doesn't mean people don't need the legal work, or they're not going to come help you, or they're not going to come find you, because, you know, I'm a believer, and I believe that God's going to bring every single person to your door that is meant to be there. Right. And that's something my husband had to also remind me constantly, because, you know, you're too much in your head when you're an entrepreneur. I mean, you know,
you
right?
You have to be in your head. I mean, it's hard not to be.
It is, but just remembering the why as well. I mean, like, I'm adding a bunch of things to my initial thing, but I feel like it's not just a one-size-fits-all category when it comes to entrepreneurship. You have to be remembering of the why, because the why is going to keep you pushing forward even when you have the hard moments, even when you have the sad moments, even if you have moments that are not going the way you plan. Like, you know, obviously I'm not the judge. I can't make determinations on what happens in a child custody case, but I need to be okay with why I'm doing it, so that way I can help my clients through that with communicating and getting them through the case.
See, I think what we need to go into, with the mindset we need to have going into owning a business, is forget everything you think you know.
Okay.
Forget everything you think you know, and then go into it like, I need to learn everything that I can learn. Because I always love to talk about sports. And to me, sports is something, like, you can work on it every day. I can go in the gym, I can shoot every day, I can condition, I can do all the things, and I know you're going to see it in the games, you're going to see it in the practice. Entrepreneurship is a longer, it's you still see it in the game, right? But it's it can be a long time down the road. You can plan, you can go in there, you can do all the things, and something happens in the market, right? And it kills your entire plan that you had. So I think you need to forget everything, and you have to keep learning every single day and seeing what other people are doing. Let's talk about personal culture a little bit. Now, personal culture is what I define as the energy that you bring when you walk into a room and the impact that you leave when you walk out of the room. I think it's so important to who we are as people. How does it guide you and your practice of law?
Well, you know, I deal with death, and as grim as that is for me to say, I mean, that is basically the bulk of my business right now. And so because I'm dealing with death, I try to bring light to wherever I go, because I don't want people to associate me with darkness, even though we could be talking about darkness. And so when I walk into a room, I try to be, I don't want to say bubbly, but I try to be real, right? I want people to have a safe space to come talk to me about anything and everything. And I think that's something that I started when I was a social worker, not even realizing how much it was going to carry me throughout my entire career. So I like to create a safe space. I want people to talk to me. I want to be warm and inviting anywhere I go, because I'm dealing with such heartache when people are losing loved ones, or their loved ones are no longer able to make a decision, or even if they're just planning for death. I mean, a lot of people have so much fear involved in that whole process of estate planning, with wills and trusts and all of the other documents that are important. And so creating a safe space, being warm, being inviting, being kind. I mean, the kindness thing is, we take it for granted sometimes, because you don't realize how many people are not kind anymore. And so trying to kind of instill and build on top of that value system within myself has really helped my clients feel safe to be able to go through the entire process, regardless of what area of law we're working through.
Definitely. And I think the area that you're in, kindness is everything. I mean, it's such a heavy, death is heavy. It's heavy. If I'm planning my own or, you know, planning for someone else, it's one of the hardest things I think we can do, but one of the most important things that we can do as well. Now, if you could go back to your younger self and give yourself one piece of career advice, what would that be?
Ooh. Okay. I would tell myself that it's going to be okay. There were so many times where I was devastated because something was not happening the way it was supposed to go. Or, you know, I wasn't practicing and I didn't pass the bar. I mean, I believe that every single decision that I have made and everything that hasn't happened and everything that didn't happen was supposed to bring me to where I am today. I think my life would look very different if I got everything I wanted when I wanted it. But that's not life. Right. So telling myself it's going to be okay and, you know, trust the process. The process is leading you to where you need to go, but also building your character up enough to be able to deal with what you need to deal with when you get there.
I love that you said that we have to wait and trust the process, because there have been times when I know had I gotten a contract I was really going after, there is no way I would have been able to handle it. And in our minds, we're like, I want this. I've been working for this. This should be happening right now. Excuse me. And you look back and you're like, that should not have been happening right now. That would have messed up not only the contract, but the relationship and all of those things. So there is a level of patience there that has nothing to do with us, but it has to do with everything that we are learning and still preparing for.
Absolutely.
So thank you so much for doing that. We will be back in just a moment with the lightning round. This is where we are going to get to know DNA outside of the job a little bit.
Hold up, we're just getting started. More truth, more strategy, and less BS. Coming up next on Be Better Than Your BS, right here on Now Media Television. This is Be Better Than Your BS with Risha Grant, and around here, we get rid of the BS.
We are back because now we are in overtime. Quick hits, no timeouts, all fun. Let's go. What's your favorite comfort food when you've had a long day?
Oh, there's too many to choose from, but I love Cinnabons.
Cinnabons. I thought you were going to get some big soul food.
Travel. I've actually traveled for 2 hours just to get one. That's how
really?
Much
Gosh,
it's a problem. I've cut back a little bit as I've gotten older because, I mean, I have to, my health. But when I was a kid, my mom used to eat them when she was pregnant with me, and it shows. I was obsessed.
So not your fault. It's your mom's fault.
It is.
Okay, if you weren't practicing law, what career would you be chasing right now?
Actually, I would be a therapist, which is kind of interesting because a lawyer is kind of like a counselor. That's why they call us counselors, because we're the counselors of law. Okay. But actually, there's a point in my life where I was choosing between getting my PhD in psychology or going to law school. And I said, you know what? Law school's faster. And I think I could make more of a difference in the law than I would be if I was a psychologist.
I think you would have been great in either one.
Thanks.
So Boston or Texas, which one feels more like home?
Texas.
Really?
Ironically, it's so weird that I say that. I think it's because, you know, Boston, I love Boston. It's just cold. And I tell my husband, I said, you know, if Boston was warmer and it was cheaper, we would have ended up staying there. But because we have a home in Texas where we've been able to thrive, I mean, my business is thriving, his business is thriving. So I think because of the circumstances, yeah, Texas is where we are. And plus, because we're close to Houston, that's another reason.
I was getting ready to say, let's talk about the traffic, but traffic is bad in Houston and it is bad in Boston. Those are two places I absolutely hate driving because you're not driving, you're sitting for the most part.
Well, traffic doesn't bother me. I've been driving my whole life. I mean, my parents took us to Florida and we drove from Boston to Florida for vacations. And then my husband's a commercial truck driver by day. So I'm used to driving and being stuck in traffic.
Yeah, so you're from Boston. So
touche.
Now, if you ever come visit me in Tulsa, it's called the 20-minute city. We can get anywhere in 20 minutes. And we're pissed if it's 30 minutes, right?
So I don't even know what it's like.
One of my best friends used to live in Houston, and literally we would have dinner reservations at 7 and leave at like 4:30. I'm like, this is ridiculous. So cannot deal with the traffic. Favorite way to unwind after a tough case?
Ooh, I watch a comedy. I have to laugh to keep myself from crying.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think that's so important. But how hard is it to try to find something to watch that does not have any trauma, violence? I mean, just something easy, you can laugh and chill. You have to find like a rom-com or something like that, because I'm the same way. I'm like, I'm trying to find something to watch that does not have trauma in it.
You know, it's interesting. It's so hard to find something, but I think that I know how to, well, actually I'm still learning. Let me stop lying. I see, this is the BS part, right? I think it's hard to find something, but I enjoy watching television because I don't feel like I'm living my life in the moment. So it's kind of a mindless thing for me where it doesn't matter if there is trauma involved, I can still watch it because I'm like, okay, well, it's not connected to me.
Right.
It's not connected to my clients. So I can enjoy this moment at this time.
I love that. I'm so empathetic. Like, I will just sit there and cry. So it's like, I can't, you know, I get too involved in it. Like, I don't know it's fiction, but probably because it mirrors what's going on in the world. But yeah.
You know what? I'm going to tell you something, because I believe myself to be like an empath, right? Like, I feel other people's feelings, but I think being a social worker and then like going through the experiences as a lawyer, I've been able to kind of not remove myself, but still address situations and not feel like it's being connected to me, so I can still guide my clients through it. I know we're not supposed to be talking about the law, but I had to just say
that real quick. No,
it's important. Because I still cry over shows too. Like, don't get it twisted. I'm crying when I'm like, oh, this is so sad. And then I'm like, okay.
No,
but
it's important.
The good thing is I can deal with it.
Yeah. No, I started in news. And so I had to get out of news because I was becoming desensitized to the stories. And I didn't want to do that. So I got to get out of news. So that's what I did. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. The song. What is the song that instantly gets you in the right mindset? Like, ready to walk into the courtroom. I got this.
Ooh. Okay. I have too many, but like,
my we got time. Gonna, give me a few.
He's gonna laugh at me, but I love like Choppa Style. I'm that person.
Say
like,
that again. I'm sorry. You love what?
Choppa Style. Okay. You know, because I have to dance, because dancing is in my blood. So it kind of will get me, I'm listening to the song and I'm dancing now. So yeah, that's the song. It does not make sense, but I think it's the beat, the way the beat drops. Uh-huh. It doesn't think of anything and except for just moving. So yeah.
Love it. So no song, just a style of music.
Well, the song Choppa Style by, who is it? I should know the artist, but it's like,
Okay. Okay.
I also sing.
I hear a little bit of, I was like, I hear a little bit of harmonizing there.
I sang growing up and I used to perform. So
okay.
There's a little bit of that.
Okay. Daily ritual that keeps you grounded.
Listening to gospel music, actually. That is the only thing that kind of brings me back down, because if I'm in my thoughts, it allows me to worship and be closer to God in that moment to kind of guide me in what I need to do with my cases and my clients.
Okay, so new school gospel or old school gospel?
Old school gospel.
Me too.
I'm classic all the way.
Me too. I cannot get into the news. There's a few new school, because like I love, Corinne. Is it Corinne? Am I saying her name right? You know what I'm talking about?
Corinne Haythorne.
Yes, thank you. Okay. I absolutely love her music. I've got to hear, you know, there's days where I'm just on repeat with it. But I love the old school. So, and everybody tells me the old school stuff is too, it's too down and, you know,
it's timeless though.
It's
timeless. Especially with what we're going through in this life, it's timeless.
Yeah, we need some of the old school stuff. Something about you most people would never guess.
Actually, they probably could guess this, but I'm going to say it anyways. I was a theater head. Like, so I used to try out for, you know, plays all the time, and I always was the lead in every single play I auditioned for. So
I could see that.
I mean, personality-wise, I think people would know that. I danced for over 20 years.
Okay, what kind of dance?
I did tap and jazz.
Okay.
So that was something that people are like, you dance for that long? And I'm like, I know.
Is it something you considered as a career path at some point?
Oh, no.
Okay. I was like, no. So not head up in the clouds. You're not a head up in the clouds person. Because people tend to associate dance with being with your head being in the cloud. But I mean, it's a very viable career. So
it is. But, you know, I'm also Caribbean, so I wasn't allowed to have those types of dreams.
That's a whole different show. And wait, Caribbean, I mean, there's a lot of dance and it's a part of the culture.
It is a part of the culture, but it's not a part of the culture to have a career field, like a whole career about it. I mean, it's fun to do, but not to to make money off of. I wasn't allowed to be in that space growing up. So
okay. Well, I'll talk to your parents about that one later. Okay.
Okay, yeah.
Best advice you've ever received and who gave it to you?
Oh my gosh, I'm going to try not to cry on the show. My grandfather. I actually have a picture. It turned out to be a live picture, but it was my birthday right before he died. And he told me to keep on pushing.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. And it's something I stay true to every single day.
Grandparents are amazing. My grandmother told me 99 and a half won't do. You have to get 100. And we actually put that on her tombstone because it every time I'm having a tough time or something's not going in my way or I ask myself, did you give 100? Did you do everything you could do? And because I'd be so upset and she'd be like, 99 and a half won't do. And I was just like, ugh. But you know, when you think about it, like how many times are we actually giving everything that we can give?
Absolutely. I love that. Yeah. I'm going to start to add on to my thing. But
it's an old church song, too. It's an old church song, too.
Beautiful. So
you have to check out the church song.
I will.
Your favorite way to celebrate a win, big or small?
So corny, but I call my husband.
That is not corny.
I call my husband, and we talk about it, and then, you know, I just kind of jump a little bit and get a little giddy, but it's something very small for me. Whenever I have a win, I just call him because he's my best friend. So
yes, I get it. I'm the same way with my partner. It's the first person that I'm calling, but it's so important for entrepreneurs to celebrate every single win because we tend to focus very much on the loss. Yeah. 2016 was a really rough time for me, and I'm a journaling person. Like I've probably been keeping a diary since the second grade. And I went back to look at a few years prior, and I realized I kept journals of everything bad that had happened in my business. But there was nothing good to help me through this time. And I know why I kept the bad stuff, because you know, you're like, I gotta figure this out and all of that. But it was a start, it changed something in me because now I'm like, I don't care what it is, I'm toasting to it. I'm going to, if I have to sit there by myself and say, yay, we did it, because there's been an incredible amount of amazing things that happened, but I didn't record those things. And so I think celebrating that win, even if it's calling your husband, it is everything.
It is. That's beautiful though.
It's so important. I was so mad at myself. I'm like, has it been this bad? Why am I still in business? Like, this sucks. I needed to be doing something else with my life. But don't ever lose that. Don't ever lose that because you're going to need it.
Oh, I'm sure.
You are going
to expect the unexpected.
Exactly. So here's the real, y'all. If you don't plan for it, your future will fall in your lap. DNA showed us that clarity is power. When you know what you want, you can protect it, build it, and grow it. So stop winging it. Write it down, make a plan, and start moving. Your legacy deserves strategy, not chance. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Yes.